Kearney.
Good morning, Your Honors. I am Ann Kearney, and I represent Defendant Appellant William Heibel. Mr. Heibel is here today, I guess in my presence, to ask this court to vacate his current sentence, including his term of conditional release, and remand for resentencing consistently with the Supreme Court's decision in Dorsey v. United States. Dorsey does apply to Mr. Heibel. He pled guilty to one count of distributing cocaine. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison and received 8 years of supervised release. He was sentenced on July 7, 2011, a little bit less than a year after the effective date of the Federal Sentencing Act. The government agrees that Mr. Heibel, if he were sentenced under the provisions of the Fair Sentencing Act, he would have a different outcome, and that outcome is significant. At the time of sentencing, he faced a range of 10 to life. He was sentenced to 20 years. That was at the low end of that range. After the Fair Sentencing Act, he faced a sentencing range of 0 to 30, now obviously at the higher end. There was also a significant change in the sentencing guidelines, particularly the career offender guideline range, which is what the government had asked for and what the district court adopted. That range under the FSA, if it were criminal category 4, would have been 151 to 188 months, and even rather than the 210, 262 that he saw with the judge. Even if criminal category 6 were used, which is what the government wanted, the category under the range under the Fair Sentencing Act would have still been 188 to 235. Again, it would have been different, less than the 240 months imposed. There were changes to supervisory release. He received 8 years. The starting point under the Fair Sentencing Act would have been 6. The government argues their issue is that Mr. Heibel should not receive the benefits of the Fair Sentencing Act because he waived that possibility. He did not. There was no intentional relinquishment of right here. At the change of plea hearing, Mr. Heibel argued to the Magistrate Judge Bernthal, that he should be sentenced under the Fair Sentencing Act, and that's in the appendix on page 15. To be sure, the magistrate judge was not the sentencing judge, but he did tell Mr. Heibel that he could appeal the decision, and that's what he did. In its brief, the government really focuses on the sentencing hearing, of course, and really talks about the fact that there was some sort of foregoing.
In some earlier case that a defendant can preserve an issue for appeal by arguing it to a magistrate judge, but then bypassing it in front of the judge who actually imposes the sentence? I mean, that would be pretty strange, wouldn't it? We want to induce defendants to make their arguments to the guy who's going to do the sentencing, not to somebody else.
The preferred course, certainly, Your Honor, is to talk about it in sentencing. But in these circumstances, particularly when Mr. Heibel himself was raising this, he's the one who raised it before the magistrate judge. And the magistrate judge really did say to him, look, you've raised this, you can appeal it.
But in front of the district judge, Mr. Heibel is questioned specifically by the district judge about whether he's waiving his objections, given that the judge is going to disregard other relevant conduct and focus in a fairly favorable range for him. And he says he waives his objections.
I think the important piece there, Your Honor, is what's happening, what he's waiving. He's waiving written objections that he made to the relevant conduct piece. And, yes, that is true. He did say that he waived, but it was those objections. What's going on here is the government is the one who's coming forward saying, let's sentence him under the career offender guidelines because we don't want to have to bring in live testimony to deal with this relevant conduct. And so they agree, and they say, fine, let's go under these career offender guidelines. And then the judge obviously, and that would have been a category of 6 under some circumstances, but the judge went down to 4. So the waiver piece or what he forewent there, the deal, the advantage was correct, not being sentenced under the relevant conduct. But it was a deal that everybody had agreed upon and the government, in fact, had promoted, which is the career offender. The Fair Sentencing Act was not part of all of this with regard to the foregoing. He had already raised that. He had already said that. We do have cases, Your Honor, recent cases after Dorsey, where Your Honors have said, for instance, you know, well, there wasn't anything said at the change of plea, there wasn't anything said at sentencing, but we're still going to look. So it's true. There's not one that says absolutely if you say it, change of plea, it's enough. But certainly this Court has said given that we're talking about the need for an intentional relinquishment, that if something isn't said at all, that doesn't mean you're intentionally relinquishing. And I think here, if we look at the waiver in the compartment it's supposed to be in, which is the waiver having to do with relevant conduct, which is what the government had asked for and what everybody agreed to, that does not encompass the Fair Sentencing Act. That Fair Sentencing Act stuff was not even in the pre-sentence report, and that's what those objections went to.
What would be the benefit of a resentence?
The benefit here would be substantial. If the government, if the case went back down to the district court and the district court went under the career offender guidelines, which everybody had suggested would happen, you'd be looking at, even if it were a four category, the range itself would be 151 to 188.
Couldn't it bring back in all of the relevant conduct that was bypassed in the prior sentencing? Wouldn't he face that?
Well, there is that possibility. I mean, certainly the fact resentencing is resentencing. The situation, though, even if it were there was some backstory with regard to what was going on in dealing with the pre-sentence report, where there was really talk from the government that they wanted to go through the career offender. So our position, frankly, is that the government put that forward. It was an understanding. That, in effect, was what the plea went forward on.
It was a good deal for him at that point, right?
It was a good deal for him, but it was a good deal for the government, too. They didn't have to bring in all these relevant conduct people. And Mr. Heibel has said, and we've said in other circumstances, there were certain pieces of that relevant conduct that occurred when he was in prison, supposedly. So it was a deal, but it was the government's deal. They were the one who said, let's do career offender. And Mr. Heibel agreed. And you're right, there was that benefit. But that was not a trade-off for not talking about the Fair Sentencing Act. So there is a significant change with regard to what Mr. Heibel would be looking at under the sentencing ranges, under the Fair Sentencing Act. He said 20 years. I mean, even the high point of the ranges under Category 6 is below that. Just to make a quick point, I know I don't have much time, but if the court were to find, for instance, that it was a situation where it should have been raised and it wasn't, that would be plain error, we would argue, that it was negligence. And if you look at a plain error analysis here, there was plain error. The law was different when he was sentenced. It's changed now. And as we've talked about, there was a substantial injury. There's harm here to Mr. Heibel's substantial rights.
We understand this as a waiver. There can't be any plain error analysis. Plain error applies to forfeitures, not waivers.
And I'm arguing to Your Honor that it is a forfeiture, that what's going on here is he raised it before. He didn't say anything, but that's a forfeiture, not intentional relinquishment and error. So I'm sorry, a waiver. So yes, Your Honor, but I'm saying it's not a waiver. I see that my time is up, so I'd like to reserve a couple moments for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, counsel. Mr. Hartzler.
Thank you again. Joe Hartzler for the United States. We're relying almost exclusively on pages 13 through 17 of the sentencing transcript. And in terms of it being a plain error forfeiture versus a waiver, I direct your attention to page 15 of that transcript where the court asks Mr. Heibel himself, is that correct, Mr. Heibel? You also withdraw your objections with the agreement that the court start at the offense level 34, criminal history 6, advisory guideline 262 to 327 instead of 360 to life. Doesn't refer to it as a career offender guideline. The judge asks, do you agree to this guideline range, 262 to 327? Mr. Heibel says, yes, sir. He is withdrawing all of his objections so long as the judge uses the 262 to 327 range as a starting point, which the judge did. That constitutes a waiver. Judge Tender, you ask, wasn't this a good deal for him? It still is a good deal. The government dismissed the first two counts, the first of which was a conspiracy count that involved an allegation that he had was involved in more than 50 grams of crack cocaine and more than 500 grams of powder cocaine. So if this case were to be vacated, sentence were to be vacated and sent back, and the government reinstated those counts, he could still face the mandatory 10 on the powder cocaine. It's only that the Fair Sentencing Act eliminates the mandatory 10 for the various counts on the crack cocaine. And in addition, if the court were to vacate the sentence, as one of you recognized, and I believe it was you, Judge Tinder, send it back for resentencing, the government should be free to prove up the relevant conduct, which is going to boost his guideline range to 360 to life. Now, I think from the sentencing transcript, it's pretty clear that the judge is unlikely to sentence him to 360 to life. I think that was probably reasonable to anticipate that was not likely to happen even in the first go-around. And so the defendant and the government reached an understanding. And with that understanding, Mr. Heibel agreed to withdraw any other objection. That constitutes waiver.
If he went back, he could get the same sentence, couldn't he?
I beg your pardon, I didn't hear you.
He could get the same sentence.
He could get the same sentence. He could get a higher sentence. He could get a lower sentence.
Well, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying that I don't think the circumstances are going to dramatically change. The Fair Sentencing Act changes it for the crack cocaine offense. It's not going to change it if the government reinstates count one and he's found guilty on the powder cocaine. He's still going to face a mandatory 10 on that. Yeah, I think that the truth is, you're right, he's very likely to receive the same sentence. The judge obviously evaluated it, decided that the career offender guideline, the Category 6, overrepresented his criminal history and dropped it down two levels. That's likely to happen again, but not with the Fair Sentencing Act. The judge is likely to say, okay, I see it's overrepresented, but I think that this offense merits the sentence you received before. But now we're in range of speculation. I don't know what the sentencing judge would do if it goes back. I'm hoping it doesn't go back and the court will find that he waived the objection. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Kearney?
Thanks, Your Honors. Mr. Hartzler now is talking about going backwards, asking for a situation where we had a plea, and the plea was based on understanding. So, yeah, I guess he could, the government could go before the court and change the whole dynamic here.
Well, it still comes in under relevant conduct, though, even if the count isn't reinstated.
But if the government is doing this deal, which it did, and it said to the government, you're right, it's not a written thing, but there's an understanding there. You plead to one, the third count, the non-conspiracy count, the non-powder count, and we will go with the career offender route. And that's what the court was seeing, and that's what Mr. Heibel reacted to. This was not Mr. Heibel's way of going about it. It was the government's way. So, yes, technically the court could decide to go in the relevant conduct route using the drug quantities, but it was the government's approach that started this to begin with. And I think with regard to what the judge would do, I think we saw what the judge did here. He didn't think that the relevant conduct itself was representative of what had gone on. And that's why he didn't want to adopt that route either. He went the career route. And he sentenced him to 20 years, which was the low end of that range. So I disagree respectfully with I disagree that that's what the judge is going to do, that he's going to say get the same sentence, because he was giving this guy what was due him based on, or at least what was consistent with what the judge thought was the past. He said, the judge did, we have to start with 10 here, that's a mandatory minimum, and then we're doubling that. But he also said that doubling is only it works because we've got this criminal offense and we can put it in the Category 4, which is more representative. So I disagree. I think there would be a significant difference here if it went back to the judge. He certainly wouldn't at least say right away it would be the same sentence. I think there's definitely a possibility. And because Mr. Heibel did not waive his right to talk about the FSA and be sentenced there, we ask that it be vacated and remanded for resentencing. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. And Ms. Kearney, we appreciate your willingness to accept the appointment and your assistance to the court as well as your client. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.